KNX News 97.1 FM.
This is Countdown 2024.
Charles Feldman and Margaret Carrero.
Well, the transition to a new president and a new controlling party in Washington marches on. 67 days left to go until Donald Trump is sworn back into office. So thanks for counting down this post-election period with us. On today's Countdown 2024, Donald Trump's nomination of controversial Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz has a lot of people worried that Trump will follow through on his threats to use the Justice Department to exact revenge on his political enemies. So we will talk with the ACLU today on its plan for resistance. And can Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy really root out trillions of dollars in government fraud and waste? But first this.
After causing a stir with highly partisan nominations to head the Defense Department, Justice Department, and the National Intelligence Apparatus, President-elect Trump has made another splash. He has named Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to head the Department of Health and Human Services. Kennedy is an infamous anti-vaxxer who, before the election, was promising to clear out entire departments of the Food and Drug Administration if he got the top HHS job. There are already reports of FDA employees quitting en masse if Kennedy is confirmed for the post.
Now, in spite of some initial hesitation and resistance to Matt Gaetz, being nominated by Trump to be the nation's attorney general, many Republican senators are now signaling that they will grudgingly defer to the president-elect and support Gaetz's nomination. Meantime, all eyes are on a House Ethics Panel investigation of Gaetz and a report on allegations that he provided drugs and had sex with underage girls. Now, that report could be released at any time now, and it is said to be quite damaging to his already somewhat checkered reputation.
And the New York Times is reporting that Elon Musk met with Iran's ambassador to the United Nations. The tech billionaire and Iranian envoy met at a secret location for over an hour, discussing ways to defuse tensions between the United States and the Islamic Republic. Iran's government, which was reportedly trying to assassinate Trump during the campaign, is now favoring negotiations with the Trump administration.
During President Trump's first term in office from 2017 to 2021, the American Civil Liberties Union filed 400 lawsuits against his administration challenging various policies and actions. They are promising to be just as active this time around. Deidre Schieffling is the ACLU's chief political and advocacy officer. Deidre, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let me ask, first off, if that number is correct, that there were some 400 lawsuits filed when Trump was in office the first time, what was the batting average? How many wins, how many losses?
Well, that number is correct. 464, I think, is our exact count of legal actions filed during Trump's first administration. And we won a good amount of them, you know, about half, which is pretty good batting average, especially on some of the issues that we were filing on. So things like the Muslim ban, we were able to block the Muslim ban for 15 months. And when it eventually went into place, it was significantly curtailed. That was a win. That happened because of our litigation strategy. This time, not only do we have a strong litigation strategy to oppose some of the undemocratic, unconstitutional, and downright immoral things that Trump is proposing, but we also have an affiliate in every single state ready to really leverage governors, attorneys general, state legislatures to stop and block some of the worst excesses, worst abuses of a future Trump administration.
Do you anticipate even more than that 400 plus lawsuits?
Potentially. I mean, Trump has made no secret of his desire to weaponize the Department of Justice and use the Department of Justice as a method of revenge against his perceived political enemies, attacking voters or protesters or journalists or abortion care providers. We don't know what he might do, but we will be prepared with our very deep bench of litigators and our very deep bench of advocates on the state and federal level to resist his attempts to do things that are unlawful or undemocratic.
Right,
and the other thing I'll just...
Go ahead. Finish your thought.
The other thing I would just say is, during the first Trump administration, our grassroots supporter number tripled during that 4 years in office, and to millions and millions of people who joined us and were grassroots supporters of the ACLU. This time around, we're starting with 6.5 million people power volunteers. These are people who are ready to stand up and resist, who are ready to use their voices to show that the American public does not support this kind of undemocratic behavior and prosecuting of people. And so we are excited to mobilize that grassroots army in the streets across
all
the
right.
country.
But let me challenge what you just said, Deidre, because if you look at the election results, clearly Mr. Trump and the Republican Party, certainly the MAGA wing of the Republican Party, had an electoral mandate. So why should the ACLU put up resistance when the majority of eligible voters decided that they wanted what Trump is saying he intends to do? Or they wouldn't have voted for him. They would have voted for Kamala Harris or someone else.
I think there are a lot of factors at play in elections, but I believe that when voters see what the Trump administration is promising to do in action, they will not support it. So imagine what the immigration strategy of the Trump administration was the first time around. We're talking about detention centers. We're talking about family separation, babies and toddlers being ripped away from their parents, separated from their parents for months and months as a strategy of deterrence. This was wildly unpopular with American voters, and people were horrified that Donald Trump's government would act this way. Things like overturning Roe versus Wade. Abortion access is more popular across this country than any politician, than any political party. So when we think about when voters are actually experiencing Donald Trump's actions in their own lives and seeing their friends and neighbors rounded up in workplace raids, or realizing that their own access to birth control or reproductive health care is restricted, we believe they will be ready to resist, they will be ready to fight back, and they will be ready to preserve our democracy.
We are speaking with Deirdre Schieffling, the ACLU's Chief Political and Advocacy Officer. A little bit earlier, you were talking about the president-elect wanting to go after his adversaries, his political opponents. He has tapped Matt Gaetz to be attorney general. Whether or not he is actually confirmed, his nomination certainly suggests that Trump wants someone who is loyal to him, someone willing to go after those real or perceived opponents. Should Trump try to go after his political opponents, what can the ACLU do to stop it?
Yes, first we will use every tool in our toolbox. So we will use litigation to block things that are abuses of executive power, abuses of our law and our Constitution. One core tenet of our democracy is having an independent Justice Department, is having separation of powers. So this is a critical piece of our democracy, and we will fight with every tool in our toolbox, including litigation and including advocacy and attempts to pass laws at the state level.
Right, but Deidre, one thing, as I'm sure you know, that has changed to a significant degree in the past few months alone is the U.S. Supreme Court ruling that does give a sitting president a lot more room to do a whole bunch of things that perhaps we all thought presidents couldn't or shouldn't have been able to do. Will that not thwart any efforts of resistance on the part of the ACLU?
I think you're referring to the presidential immunity ruling.
Yep.
And that only applies to the president. That does not apply to the head of the Department of Justice. It does not apply to his chief of staff. It does not apply to any other person. It only applies to the president. So no, I don't think that is carte blanche for the president to just do whatever he wants. I think that his whole administration will be held accountable for doing things that are undemocratic or illegal. And I think midterms are only 2 years away. And so there'll be a chance to have a real referendum on what voters think about Donald Trump's approach to governing in a mere 2 years, which is not very far.
And, you know, kind of touching on that a little bit, with the Republicans controlling both the House and the Senate, do you see that in these next 2 years as kind of a roadblock as far as trying to urge members to use their constitutional powers to provide oversight, investigate wrongdoing and the like?
I think we'll have to see. I mean, I hope that our Republican-controlled House and Senate leadership will live up to their constitutional duties and will act as a check and balance on the president as needed. I hope that they will fulfill the office that they have been elected to do and really act in the way that our democracy intended them to act. And if they don't, the ACLU will be there to litigate, to advocate, and to mobilize.
Deirdre Schieffling, the ACLU's chief political and advocacy officer. Thanks.
Donald Trump is trusting a couple of billionaires to cut potentially trillions out of the federal budget. But can the rest of us trust Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy to do the job correctly? That's coming up next.
It's Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM. This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
Welcome back to Countdown 2024. Along with Charles Feldman, I'm Margaret Carrero. Just about every modern American president has come into office promising to find and cut waste and fraud in the massive federal budget, but very few of them have succeeded in making any kind of significant dent in spending. Donald Trump says he has found the recipe for success, putting a couple of the world's wealthiest men in charge of the mission to root out waste.
Now, there are, of course, a lot of potential problems for Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy as they launched the newly created Department of Government Efficiency, which is actually not going to be a government agency. There are the glaring conflicts of interest. There's the fact that Congress ultimately controls spending. And then there is the age-old challenge that government does not run like a business. Mark Goldwine is Senior Vice President and Senior Policy Director for the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Mark, maybe the government should run like a business, and maybe two astute businessmen like Ramaswamy and Musk can figure it out finally.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. And I sure hope so. Look, government doesn't have a profit motive, and that's appropriate. So it's never going to run like a business. But that doesn't mean we can't take efficiency lessons from businesses. Businesses have to worry about their bottom line. And so they do worry about their costs a lot more than the federal government. We ought to take that lesson and start caring about cost.
Well, we don't have to worry about the bottom line in terms of profits, but we do have to worry about deficits.
Oh, we absolutely should. Our interest costs alone are now the second largest government program, larger than defense or Medicare. Debt is approaching record levels. But sadly, in recent years, politicians have seemed to kind of wave this aside, hoping that maybe some future Congress will deal with the problem when it's a very real problem today.
You know, Elon Musk has suggested that it would be possible to cut at least $2 trillion from government spending by eradicating waste. Is that realistic, or is that an effort that's kind of failed from the get-go?
I don't think we're going to get $2 trillion per year. That would be basically a third of the budget, and a third of the budget isn't waste. But we can get trillions of dollars over a decade, particularly if we define efficiency broadly, and if we define it to include waste in the healthcare system, and there's so much waste in Medicare and Medicaid at the moment.
Well, of course, one of the concerns that people have is that those are entitlement programs, and yes, I'm sure there's plenty of waste, but there's also the danger, is there not, of cutting those important programs to the bone?
Well, I don't think we should cut them to the bone. But the issue with Medicare in particular and Medicaid as well is that we spend a tremendous amount of money that gets no value. We overpay Medicare Advantage plans more than what they're worth. We pay more for the exact same procedure if it's in a hospital than in a doctor's office. We let states basically trick the federal government into giving them higher Medicaid matches, colluding with the hospitals. There's so much room to lower healthcare costs in a way that maintains the current access and level of care. But does so at a lower price for the federal government and, by the way, for Medicare beneficiaries.
Let's talk a little bit about like scientific research, right? A lot of money is spent on that, and a lot of MAGA conservatives already kind of highlighting some pieces of that research where millions have been spent on what kind of sounds like maybe crazy experiments. For instance, the studies on the Gila monster venom that inspired popular weight loss drugs as forms of government waste. That's what they're saying. But what about those federal investments in different scientific studies? Talk about what they've yielded for Americans over the years. What kind of medical breakthroughs?
So look, there's a million ways that you can find a sort of failed government investment or a failed program or something that sounds silly. And that can be helpful in illustrating what we're doing. But what we really need to fix is sort of the process of picking these solutions. Make sure they're not politicized. We're going to pick winners and we're going to pick losers. As long as we have an NIH, as long as we do research, we're going to pick winners and losers. But they ought to be picked through a process that maximizes our winners. And so keeping the politics out of it can really help on that front, I think, not just taking a hatchet to the entire research process.
We're talking with Mark Goldwein, Senior Vice President and Senior Policy Director for the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Mark, you were talking about how states, for example, when it comes to Medicaid, Medicare, can trick the federal government. And isn't that the problem all across the board, that you've got lobbyists? If it's not for the state, it's for the military. If it's not for the military, it's for the pharmaceutical companies. I mean, everyone has their army, if you will, of lobbyists, and they're very strong, they're very powerful, and they have lots and lots of money. So when you sort of pit those against two powerful people, Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, who in this situation is the David and who is the Goliath?
I mean, look, the special interest, it's not one Goliath, right? It's 1,000 different Goliaths. And what we learned, I worked in the Simpson-Bowles Commission in 2010, and what we learned is the only way to try to slay the Goliaths is to do them all at once. If you were just picking on one special interest, they could come after you. But if you said, look, we're goring every ox. We're looking at efficiency throughout government. And yes, that means the lawyers, that means the realtors, that means the hospitals, that means the insurers, that means the states, that means everybody is in on the solution. I think you have a much better chance of succeeding than if you narrow in just on, say, your political enemies or one or two special interests.
Mark, hang with us. Waste not, want not. More on the hunt for government waste coming up next as we close out the Thursday edition of Countdown 2024.
This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
Welcome back to the Thursday edition of Countdown 2024. Along with Margaret Carrero, I'm Charles Feldman.
We finish out our conversation with Mark Goldwein at the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget on potential government waste.
Doing the kinds of cuts that Mr. Trump says he wants and that he is empowering Musk and Ramaswamy to carry through would take time. Do you think that those two who have a lot on their plate will have the patience to do that?
Well, I hope so. Look, they got to have a good staff. They're not going to just come up with these ideas by themselves. So I hope they hire a good staff. They set themselves a deadline of July 4th, 2026. That's a decent amount of time. And I hope they come up with some good recommendations. And then Congress can evaluate them and hopefully put some into law.
You know, Musk has said he wants to reduce the number of federal agencies to 99, down from more than 400. Do you think that's doable?
I don't think we should pick arbitrary numbers of agencies before we've taken a full look at the government. But there are opportunities, I think, to consolidate agencies. And in doing so, we can probably get some bureaucratic efficiencies along the way.
Are you worried about the potential conflicts of interest? Because even though neither gentleman will be Musk and Ramaswamy in the government, they certainly will have the ear of the president. And yet both of these people have contracts and business concerns that require government regulation or authorization.
Yeah, I'll let other people weigh in on sort of the legal side of that. This only works if everything is on the table.
Well, it isn't merely a legal question. It's an ethical question.
I'll let other people weigh in on that question. But what I'll say is this only works if everything is on the table. And that includes tax breaks for electric vehicles, for example. It has to include an all of government, all of tax code approach. And that's the only way to do this seriously.
And it sounds like you are all for kind of this idea of taking a look at everything. It feels like it's a lot easier said than done to really cut any waste.
It's certainly a lot easier said than done. I mean, look, there's potentially trillions of dollars of waste if we define it broadly. But that requires aggressively looking at what we spend in Medicare and Medicaid. If we're just talking about cutting fraud, Yeah, we should do that. But there's not all that much money we can get from just cutting fraud. If we're just talking about cutting the bureaucracy, yeah, we should do that. But there's limits. We need to look at efficiency in the broadest sense of the word and look at the tax code and at all parts of the budget, including defense, by the way.
All right. Mark Goldwine, Senior Vice President and Senior Policy Director for the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Thank you so much.
Coming up in tomorrow's Countdown 2024, President-elect Trump has been promising for years to shut down the Federal Department of Education if he won re-election. What will that mean for the tens of millions of American kids in public schools? We will talk with a former U.S. Secretary of Education. If you miss our show, catch up on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts. And all you have to do is kind of search for Countdown 2024. That's the name of the show. And follow it.